From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Many of us, with even a rudimentary knowledge of Black history, have heard of the Underground Railroad, that route along which enslaved people from southern states made the life-risking and harrowing journey north toward freedom. Less is known about enslaved people seeking freedom in Mexico, a country that had abolished slavery before the U.S. and declared as free people anyone who stepped foot on its soil. Telling that fascinating story in a new history book, as well as how it is part of the story of the Civil War, is Alice Baumgartner. She's an assistant professor of history at the University of Southern California. She received her master's in philosophy and history from Oxford, where she was a Rhodes Scholar, and a PhD in history from Yale University. She joins me to discuss her new book, South to Freedom: Runaway Slaves to Mexico and the Road to the Civil War. Welcome to the program, Alice.
Thank you so much for having me.
So first, let's talk about the fact that Mexico, as we now know it, is different from the Mexico of the time that you discuss in your book. In fact, it was not even necessarily known as Mexico, right? It was New Spain. Give us the geographic context for where you place your book.
The book really starts in 1821 when Mexico secures its independence from Spain, when it stops being New Spain and starts being Mexico.
Okay.
And at that time, Mexico spans from Northern California all the way down to what is now Central America. But throughout the decades that the book talks about, Mexico's territory shrinks. And there are two major changes that are important to the book and important to our understandings of US history. The first is in 1836, when then the Mexican province of Texas secedes from Mexico and forms the Republic of Texas. And then in 1845 is annexed to the United States, which causes the US war with Mexico, which is the second really major dismemberment of Mexican territory, as Mexican politicians like to call it. At the end of the Mexican-American War, Mexico is forced to cede to the United States what is now California, New Mexico, Arizona, Nevada, Utah, and parts of Colorado. So those are the major changes that are happening to Mexico. And of course, most of those major changes are adding territory to the United States.
And then within a few decades, we of course have the US Civil War and eventually the Emancipation Proclamation, et cetera. So we have, during the time when slavery was still in full force in the United States before the Civil War, as I mentioned, people had heard of the Underground Railroad, but of course, freedom was never guaranteed northward. And there were these fugitive slave laws that were put into place. Tell me about these fugitive slave laws and how that escape northward did not guarantee freedom for enslaved people.
Yeah, I think that's something that we often lose in our mythologization of the Underground Railroad to the North, that the Constitution of the United States included a fugitive slave clause, which guaranteed the return of enslaved people who escaped across state borders. And as a result of that, enslaved people who escaped across the Mason-Dixon line to states that had abolished slavery nonetheless did not have a legal claim to freedom. They, of course, were able to sometimes forge for themselves a de facto freedom, but that lack of legal freedom was really important. And in Canada, which had also abolished slavery in 1833 and is another major destination for enslaved people, Canada is also not explicitly promising freedom to all enslaved people who set foot on its soil. In fact, Canada has negotiated an extradition treaty with the United States under which they do sometimes return fugitive slaves, as in the case of one runaway in 1842 who was returned for having stolen a racing mare and a gold watch while escaping from Arkansas. So in neither the northern states nor in Canada is the legal claim of runaway slaves to freedom bulletproof. But in Mexico, it is.
So tell me about the law that abolished slavery in Mexico and how immediate it was in terms of promising freedom to anybody who steps foot on its soil.
So Mexico's anti-slavery history is really complicated, and historians themselves often get confused. I think if anyone listening to the show has heard of abolition in Mexico, you've probably heard it dated to 1829, to a decree issued by Mexico's then president, Vicente Guerrero, who was himself of African descent, abolishing slavery throughout Mexico. But that decree was actually overturned 2 years later in 1831. And it was only until 1837 when Mexico's Congress abolished slavery throughout Mexico. Mexico, after the abolition of slavery, is welcoming fugitive slaves, but it's really only until 1857 that Mexico adopts a new constitution that promises freedom not just to enslaved people within Mexico, but to all enslaved people who set foot on its soil, which is this really radical promise known as the Freedom Principle. And so this is kind of like the brief breakdown of anti-slavery in Mexico. And I'm happy to go into greater detail about each of those.
So there was basically a sort of window of time during which enslaved people in the United States could have a better guarantee of freedom if they made it to what was then Mexico, rather than maybe going northward, and certainly, of course, rather than staying where they were. And you tell a very personal story. You open your book with a very personal, with a story of you know, the actual human beings involved. Can you relate that story to us?
Yeah, so it's a story that takes place in 1857. And it's about two brothers, George and James Frisby, who are enslaved sailors on a steamer called the Metacomet that is anchored in the port of Veracruz. The Metacomet basically sailed between New Orleans and Veracruz, and they were on it. And they somehow swam or rowed to shore and claimed their freedom under Mexico's constitution, which I just mentioned, that promised freedom to enslaved people from the moment they set foot on Mexican soil. And so one of these brothers, George Frisby, was arrested and returned to the boat. But James Frisby learned about this constitution and actually was able to claim his freedom under Mexican law by showing proof of his enslavement, this really ironic way in which Mexico's laws, by showing that you were an enslaved person, just by showing that you could be set free and not be subject to the laws that were prevalent in the 19th century that would return sailors who sort of skipped out on their contracts at whatever port seemed most pleasant to them.
So I imagine then word had sort of spread over time that there was a better guarantee potentially of freedom for people moving toward Mexico. How well used was this route? How many people do we know, or was there any kind of estimate for numbers of enslaved people who found freedom?
It's really hard, as you can imagine, to come up with a precise number because, unfortunately, no one was taking censuses of the enslaved people who were escaping to Mexico. It was this illicit escape route. But I think that we can safely say, this is a conservative estimate, that probably around or at least 5,000 people or so made it to Mexico during at least the 1850s. So probably more than that, I would think, but around 5,000.
So not a very large number, but still significant. What was their life for those who did find, who, you know, felt that their enslavement was technically over? What sort of life did they find in what was then Mexico?
So most enslaved people were able to follow one of two paths. The first was to join Mexico's military colonies, which was this line of military outposts on Mexico's northern frontier that was designed to protect against foreign invaders of all kinds. And that option obviously came with some significant costs, that the enslaved people who joined those military colonies had to take up arms at the risk of their own lives to defend Mexican territory. And they were also participating in Mexico's pretty brutal campaign against native people. A lot of the defense or the military actions taken by these military posts were against native peoples who were raiding into Mexico. So this came at a cost. But because of these, they're in their military service, that these enslaved people had a really strong claim first to land from Mexico, bordering these military colonies, and second to citizenship in Mexico, which, as historians of the United States and slavery have shown, was a really important thing for formerly enslaved people to have, not just freedom, but political belonging. And available to enslaved people was to join Mexico's labor force. Northeastern Mexico in particular really needed laborers. And so that was another option that many enslaved people pursued.
So now let's link this historical phenomena to the Civil War in the United States, which of course was centered around the abolishing of slavery. What is the link between Mexico and its abolishing of slavery and the U.S. Civil War?
So the short answer, and it's obviously much more complicated than I can explain right now, is that the United States invaded Mexico in 1846 and conquered half of its territory.
And did that have anything to do with Mexico offering freedom to enslaved people?
It had to do with Texas annexation, which then led to the Civil War, where one of the reasons for the annexation of Texas was this belief that Britain was trying to convert Texas into an anti-slavery republic. If you go to the archives in Britain, as I did, there's no evidence that the British were trying to do this. The only country that was trying to end slavery in Texas was Mexico. So it does have something to do with that in that respect. And so the United States conquers this territory. And of course, because Mexico has abolished slavery, that territory is free. And there are Northerners of all political persuasions, and there's political polarization at this time to the extent that, to as great of an extent as there is now, that Northerners of both political parties unite behind the idea that the United States cannot reestablish slavery where it had previously been abolished. That violated the philosophical principles of the 19th century, that it would commit the same sin that they accused Great Britain of committing in the colonial period in the United States of establishing slavery in those 13 colonies. They wouldn't do it. And that was terrifying to Southern politicians because the Oregon Territory was also close to slavery. The northern reaches of the Louisiana Purchase were also close to slavery. So basically all of the Western territories in the United States would be close to slavery. And that meant that as those territories became free states, that the balance of power between the slaveholding and non-slaveholding states would be destroyed, and that the non-slaveholding states would be able to start passing legislation, particularly through the Senate, that might be antithetical to Southern interests. And so we can really see a lot of the cascade of events of the 1850s, like the attempted annexation of Cuba, as an attempt by Southern politicians to restore the sectional balance between the slaveholding and non-slaveholding states. And when Abraham Lincoln is elected on this premise that slavery cannot be expanded anymore, it shuts off any possibility that that sectional balance could be restored.
So do you then see the routes for enslaved people toward Mexico closing? Do you see those pathways to freedom shutting down as the Civil War begins?
So they shift in interesting ways, because in the midst of the Civil War, the French Emperor, Napoleon III, invades Mexico and puts an Austrian Archduke on the throne. And this establishes a Mexican empire. And Confederates see this takeover, and they believe that perhaps this new Mexican emperor would be open to allowing them to escape the United States, where slavery at the end of the Civil War is obviously going to be abolished, that they can maybe go to Mexico and bring their slaves with them there. And so we see Confederate slaveholders trying to escape to Mexico to evade the Emancipation Proclamation. But the Emperor Maximilian, the French puppet, is ultimately deposed, and the slaveholders who go there are quite disappointed, and we that does not end up being a escape route for them. But it is this interesting reversal of during the Civil War, particularly at the end, of slaveholders forcing their enslaved people to go to Mexico in hopes that perhaps this could be the new place they could continue to hold enslaved people.
How much of Mexico's Afro-Mexican population today can be traced back to enslaved African-Americans, you know, making it to Mexico? I'm wondering if there's, you know, sort of culture and tradition rooted in that history.
So the enslaved people who joined one military colony in particular, a military colony that was also joined by Seminole Indians and their Black allies, the Black Seminoles, the descendants of those people continue to live in Mexico in a town called Nacimiento de los Negros in Coahuila, one of the states in northeastern Mexico. So we see a really concentrated population of descendants there. Mexico also has a significant population of people of African descent, which is often a surprise to people because we don't often think of Mexico as a place that had slavery. But during the colonial period, when Mexico was New Spain, particularly between 1580 and 1640, New Spain imported more African slaves than any other colony in the Americas except Brazil. So there was actually this huge influx of people of African slaves into New Spain, and their descendants continue to live in Mexico, predominantly in the southeastern parts of Mexico.
Did Mexico's law abolishing slavery influence the U.S.'s eventual abolition and Lincoln's position against slavery?
I think it did, perhaps not as directly as other factors, but I think the fact that Mexico had abolished slavery, Mexico being a country that people in the United States then, as now, disparaged as a country beleaguered by poverty and political instability. The fact that Mexico had abolished slavery was a cause of embarrassment to particularly anti-slavery leaning Northerners. I think it was this, and Mexican politicians used this anti-slavery comparison as moral capital against the United States as a way to say, you're not living up to your principles of liberty and equality, and we are. So that I think played a small role in the ultimate decision or in the anti-slavery movement in the United States. But I think more broadly that really the conquest of those free Mexican territories destabilized the approach in the United States that it helped keep sectional controversy at bay, which was basically to admit a free state for a slaveholding state and thereby keep the sectional balance at bay. And if Mexico hadn't abolished slavery and the United States had conquered that territory, there's no reason that the United States couldn't have continued to do that process of admitting one for one and avoiding the Civil War and its attendant emancipation of enslaved people as a result.
So that shift, that sort of that imbalance across borders of one state promising freedom and the other one insisting on keeping the institution of slavery intact really became that destabilizing force, but the necessary destabilizing force to push for abolition across. And of course, this is very much part of the history of what we think of today as Mexico. So many Americans have forgotten that Texas and California were not that long ago part of Mexico. And it has repercussions, doesn't it, on people who today are of Mexican descent and who say they didn't cross the border crossed them.
Absolutely. I think that we have done a really good job of recognize, or not a really good job, but we're starting to recognize that the United States has these original sins, which we recognize as the enslavement of people of African descent and the forced or the conquest of indigenous peoples and the dispossession of their lands. But we haven't, I think, fully reckoned with the injustice of the war with Mexico and the conquest of those territories.
And of course, today we are at this terrifying state in American history where people are reviving the Confederate flag. White supremacy is resurgent, partly because, of course, in large part because we never truly reconciled with our history and with those original sins of U.S. history. And it just seems, tragic to see that there are still far too many Americans who are hoping to reverse the trends of freedom and democracy and don't see the Confederate flag as a symbol of preserving enslavement of human beings. It's just quite shocking.
It's very shocking. Yeah.
Well, finally, I'm wondering if your book has been received in Mexico as well, and if this is seen as part of Mexican history, or have you had any contact with students of American history in Mexico looking to explore your book?
Well, I am really hoping that we'll be able to get a Spanish translation of this book, because I think I really want it to reach Mexican audiences, because I really could not have written this book without the help of so many archivists and historians in Mexico. And so I really, really want it to be translated so that they can read it in Spanish. And so at the moment, it's still just in English, so it's not getting as much coverage in Mexico. But when I was working on it, I presented it at a couple of conferences in Mexico. And so I'm hoping that we'll be able to spread the results of this research more broadly. And of course, there are a number of historians based in Mexico and other parts of Latin America who are doing really, really important work on this. And I really want to make sure that their work is also translated into English and made available to audiences here.
Well, Alice, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Good luck to you with your book.
Thank you so much. This was so great.
My guest has been Alice Baumgartner. She is an assistant professor of history at the University of Southern California. And we've been discussing her new book, South to Freedom, Runaway Slaves to Mexico and the Road to the Civil War. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.